the squeeze on. Wilbek scores against his old club.
Yeah, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And we are the Clock and Talk, an Arsenal podcast. Thank you, Schwim, for hosting the last podcast for me, mate, while I was away.
Yeah, no problem. I tried. It's nowhere as good, but I try.
Mate, you're doing an awesome job, buddy. It was a great listen, too. Also, thanks, Tony. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Yeah, good, mate, good. Had a holiday and I'm all refreshed now and rearing to go. So, who else we got? Sabby, how are you, mate?
Yeah, brilliant. How about you?
Oh, good, mate, good. So, we'll touch base on, we'll get straight into the West Ham game because that's type of one that's been playing on a few people's mind. It was 3 points, Tony, that we should have taken away from that game, but another away draw, mate. What's your take on the West Ham game?
I mean, we have trouble breaking, I don't want to say park the bus because they're a bit more adventurous than that, but we have trouble breaking teams down that sit deep and get men behind the ball. And it showed again. Burnley done the same, albeit a better standard, and we didn't really create anything until we got the penalty. We didn't really create anything the other day. We had 2 half chances, maybe. We just struggled with that. I think it was a strange one playing. For me, it was a strange one playing Giroud, who no problem with that, but then playing an inverted fullback on one side, so you're not going to get an early crossing anyway with Maitland-Niles. I thought he had a very good game, but if you get him wide down the left, he has to come back onto his right foot before he can put a ball in. And then on the other side, you've got Bellerin, who's never been able to cross the ball. So it seemed a bit of a strange one to play a target man, so to speak, but then not put anyone that can supply him. That seemed a bit weird. I can see why he went for the change, because nothing against Lacazette, but he's looked pretty ineffective against them deep line defences so far. As I said, Burnley's the main one I can think of. He didn't have a sniff. Stoke had a goal disallowed, but he wasn't really in the game. So that change was, I can see why he brought Giroud in. I just feel he's put him in and not given him the right tools around him.
What was your take on Jack Wilshere? We'll go into a bit more detail of it later, but he got the man of the match, so that's the reason why I bring it up.
Yeah, I mean, did he do anything groundbreaking? No. Was he probably our best player? Well, yeah, probably. Maybe it's my bias, but most people coming out of the ground seem to share that view. He certainly seemed to want it more than any of our other players, and sometimes when the quality isn't there, that's all you can ask for. Look, we understand as fans, people are not going to be a 10 out of 10 on performance every time. But in terms of wanting it and effort, that's a personal choice. And so he chose, from what we see, he chose to want it more than some of our other players. So, I mean, do you A, commend him, or B, slaughter the other players because they've made the choice to not put it in, so to speak, which is a horrible phrase, as much as Jack did.
Mm-hmm. And Sanchez, he copped a fair bit of slack after the game.
Yeah, I think, again, I said similar after Southampton. Look, I've made my points clear that I don't really want him at the club and whatnot. But they're the games when he isn't going to look good, when there isn't much space. And he is going to give the ball away a lot because he tries to create chances that aren't really there. But as I said, I'd rather him do that than pass it. Look, he could pass it back to our full-backs and we look. Like Iwobi, he goes forward and he turns around and passes it back. Sanchez could do that all day. You're never going to score doing that. So, look, while Sanchez frustrates me massively, they're the type of games that do him no favours unless he scores or gets an assist, because he's trying to unlock a defence, and for me, I'd prefer him to do that. I can understand people's frustration with him, but I think where we're just on a bandwagon at the moment with we hate Sanchez, it's not... I don't think people have been objective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, I will come back to you, Tony. But, Schwin, what was your take on the game, mate?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to talk about. It was one team that had camped, albeit with an inclination to attack every now and then when they sniffed an opportunity. And the other team that just didn't create enough incision to break down a stubborn defense. I mean, the rotation was a little bit expected because of injuries. Tony had mentioned during our last podcast that a switch to a back four wouldn't surprise him, and I think he was right in that regard because we saw an addition of an attacking player with Wenger giving up that third man in central defense. But, I mean, there was not a whole lot to really talk about. I mean, there were a couple of opportunities that fell our way that could have been converted. That should have been converted. I mean, right off the bat, that Jack opportunity that was about 9 yards away from goal that he, you know, skied over the bar, albeit with his weaker foot, comes straight to mind. But all in all, it was a very frustrating game to watch. I remember there were times during the game when I just had my head in my hands, and you could just tell that this is going to be one of those games where we might not be able to snatch anything. And if anything, then, you know, West Ham might snatch something away. And we were lucky that Chicharito shot hit the crossbar and never crept in. But yeah, frustrating day at the office and a very, very frustrating 90 minutes.
Yeah, and I hate to always, but you got to look at stats and see what, you know, type of game we played. And I'm looking here, you know, total shots, 22 shots. There was 3 shots on target, 8 shots off target, and 11 shots blocked. Now, I haven't got the stats right in front of me on the Manchester United game, but it just seems we can't get the ball in the back of the net.
I mean, I'll take a step back and say we can't get a good quality shot off. You know, there's this whole debate surrounding XG, so I'm not going to try and get into that. But anyone realizes that if you take a shot from, you know, from an open scenario, but from closer to the goal, from a better angle, you have a better chance of scoring. But we're unable to create those chances that lead to a good shot. We don't take shots, you know, from outside the box. We hardly take shots from outside the box. I feel like Santi was the only player who would have a crack every now and then. But Ramsey,
there was 12 shots outside the box and 10 inside the box. So
yeah, but I mean, look at what happened, right? Either they got blocked or they went wide or they were easy saves. So the quality of the shots is not good. We're trying to create, you know, those goals that are walked into the net. And with a stubborn defense, when you have, you know, 6 people in the box defending, and then you have another bank of 3 or 4 that's providing cover for the opposition, it's difficult to walk it into the net. And sometimes you just need to have a crack. Maybe the ball's going to ricochet somewhere or the other, or it's going to get parried away by the goalkeeper, and someone can get on the end of it. But we just don't create that incision, and we don't create that opportunity every now and then against these stubborn teams, and that costed us against West Ham.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Savvy, we'll go to you, mate. What was your take on the whole game?
Yeah, first of all, on the lineup, I wasn't surprised with the changes or with the change of formation. But yeah, I was surprised to see Iwobi start because he hasn't looked very good recently. I probably expected Welbeck or someone else to start, but that didn't happen. So, yeah, I think what we are lacking is there's no penetration in the team. We are not trying enough. And there are players like Alexis Sanchez who doesn't want to be there. So he's not trying for the team. He's just playing for himself. And the thing is, when we are playing Giroud, why aren't we playing according to his strengths? We hardly put any crosses in. And we should have put many crosses in. We know, and I think most of the people will agree that Giroud is the best target man in the league. If you want to go direct, but we didn't do that. I think the players. I think the Niles came in. I think he had a good game. Wiltshire, I think he was the man of the match. He did well, and he didn't do much wrong. Otherwise, I think there is some lack of creativity, or I don't know. The teams know that if they put all the men behind the ball, we won't be able to do anything because then we rely on Alexis Sanchez or Ozil. We just pass to them and we expect them to create something. In this case, in this match, we did that with Jack too because everybody knows about his creative strengths. But obviously, when all the people are behind the ball, and you have Giroud up top, you just put the crosses in, go direct. But we didn't do that enough. And that is the reason we couldn't score, and we were lucky to draw the game because in the end, West Ham had 2-3 great chances. They could have scored the offside on another day. Any other referee could have given that as a clear goal. So we were lucky to draw the game, and I think there's lack of desire, lack of penetration. Lots of things are missing, especially away from home. Our away form is has been shocking this season, and we can say, I think the only good game I remember away from home is the Everton game. Even at Burnley, we were lucky. So we have to do something to improve our away form. I think we are struggling very badly away from home, and it can cost us a lot come the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tony, I'm almost frustrated as a lot of Arsenal fans at the moment. 3 games, 9 points up for grabs. We've managed to take 2 of them. Now, Savvy mentioned lack of creativity. We rely on Sanchez. We rely on Ozil. Is that where we're at now?
I mean, the way it's been said looks like it does look. I mean, it is a criticism, but we're essentially relying on our creative players to be creative. I think doesn't every team do that?
Yeah.
So it sounds like a criticism saying, "Oh, we're just relying on Sanchez and Ozil," but they're the two playing in the creative positions, and we bring Jack in to try and be a bit more creative. I mean, I know Ramsey was injured, but I don't think there's much argument that Jack's more creative than Ramsey. He's less likely to be on the end of things, but he's more creative. So are we relying on our creative players to be creative? Yes, but doesn't every team do that? Isn't that the need your creative players to be creative? You wouldn't have creative players. You wouldn't pay big money for the Ozils and Sanchez's. You'd get, I don't know, Lee Camo or something. It's, as I said, it does sound like a criticism when you say it like that, but surely it's just logical.
And were you shocked? Well, you're obviously probably seen the, you've seen the game live. You've probably seen it again on replay as well. Were you surprised at 22 shots? Did you notice it at the ground? Or
I mean, I've always, and I think I've said it on here before, I have massive problems with some stats. Like, for me, a shot on target is something that an average bloke wouldn't have saved. Because like, you can get stats when they go, oh, they're 10 shots on target. And you see it back and they all rolled to the keeper and he bent down, had a fag and picked it up. Like, it just, for me, that's, there's no point. And then you say, oh, something that hits the post isn't a shot on target. Well, I'd rather hit the post and be close than something where the keeper can put his hat on it. Mm. In terms of was I shocked, I was shocked at the number, but then when you start adding block shots into that, it's very difficult. As Schwinn said, they had at least 6 people behind the ball at all times, usually inside their area. So to get them through that, them bodies is always going to be difficult. I mean, there's a fair chance a shot's going to be blocked. But as I said, do you count, like, for example, I know when Ozil had, I'd say Jack's chance was the best and then probably Ozil's one. And Sanchez had a shot blocked, but the defender was less than a yard away from him. So that then contributes to your 22. But, I mean, really, we don't know if it was going for a throw-on. You never know because it was blocked that close to him.
It was blocked, yeah.
So, I mean, stats like that, I don't really care for them. It wasn't like we had 22 chances. It was we had 2, maybe 3 chances, if I'm honest. And that's what I look at, actual where you think we could have scored there. And you'd say Jack's chance, Ozil's chance, and not that it won't be done anything wrong when he hit the post, but you've got to say it's a chance where you think we could have scored there.
Okay. And Giroud, he didn't have the best of games, but that had come back to Sanchez obviously not having a great game either.
I mean, when I got home and I looked at Twitter the next day because I was too pissed off to look on the, that night, and I felt Giroud was being very harshly treated on Twitter. Again, no one in the ground sort of had a problem with what he'd done, just because he was served such shit. It was crosses being plonked in that they had no pace on them. Like, there was one time I saw someone moaning on Twitter that he should have went for goal and he tried to knock it back. But the ball was behind him. There was zero pace on it. So you've got to try and generate all the pace from a ball that's behind you. It's physically impossible. So he tried to knock it down. Defender cut it out, but that was all he could do. I think like any striker, if you serve them absolute shit, they're never going to look good. But instead of, I mean, I don't know why, but it turned out that Giroud got the criticism. But I don't think there's anything you can really say done badly. He didn't miss a chance. he didn't. I mean, look, there was obviously times when he gave the ball away, but it wasn't like excessive. It's one of them. I struggle to see where anyone say he'd done this badly. I just think he was served a load of shite.
I think by memory, it was only the one. It was a good cross come through from Maitland over to him, and I don't even know if it was a good chance, to be honest.
Well, he got the corner. I know what one you're talking about. It was early in the second half. But again, he went for the early run, and I'm not blaming Maitland-Niles because he's right-footed, and he was on quality, probably our best player. But the ball went wide to Maitland-Niles, and Maitland-Niles had to come back onto his right foot. So you've already lost the second there. So he's lost his initial run on the defender. And then by the time the ball gets to Giroud, he's being screened front and back because we've got no one else in the area. He's got a defender behind him, a defender in front of him. And he gets a touch and it hits Cresswell and goes just wide for a corner. But you, I mean, like anyone that wants to blame him, you try it with a ball with no pace that's looped up into the air and you've got a guy pushing you from behind, a guy leaning into you in front. You try and do anything with it. It's not, football's not clear cut. It's not like he had a header from 8 yards, he should have scored. He'd done as much as he could do. No one can say that's a bad miss. And if they do, they're watching the game wrong.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, Cech was another one who copped a little bit of criticism. It was obviously a clean sheet. But a lot of people said he's too old. He's over it. It's time to move on. We should have bought a keeper last January. What's your take on Cech, mate?
Yeah, I feel like Cech gets unnecessary criticism. There's no denying that, you know, there has been a fall in his quality. I mean, the man's 36 years old. So although there can be an argument made that goalkeepers usually, you know, remain consistent with their quality or there's not that much of a dip in form with age, I think Cech isn't really the missing piece of the jigsaw. There's no denying that we need reinforcements throughout the field. But I don't figure how a goalkeeper would be, you know, in the top of our priorities. What bothers me about our defensive situation is a little bit of shakiness, and I don't know why that is happening. I don't know if Cech is shaky because of the defense or if the defense is shaky because of Cech. I think that's something that needs to be inspected a little more closely, and maybe that will give us a better answer. Of course, it's difficult for me to say as a spectator from afar, but that defensive organization is something that, you know, both the defense and the goalkeeper are responsible for collectively as a unit. And there have been times, especially during the West Ham game, like, for example, when he came out and his punches were not that convincing. And, you know, there was this moment when Arnautovic pushed Koscielny into Cech and he missed that punch. But still, he seemed a little shaky. Chicharito's shot was pretty much, you know, right above his head, but he didn't even get a hand on it, if I remember correctly. So, yes, he's been shaky, and yes, there have been moments where he's been unconvincing. But I think those are issues that can be solved through focused defensive training, which we know is not something that Arsene concentrates on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Would you like to see Cooper come January or the end of the summer?
I mean, I would love to, but at what cost? Where do we sacrifice instead of bringing, you know, a midfielder? Let's say if you bring in a goalkeeper, I don't know if that's my choice. But I think transfer activity has to be dictated by our outs as well. People who leave, people keep saying we need a midfielder, and I would agree, like a central midfielder, and I would agree with them. But we have so much depth right now, and not good quality depth. You know, I mean, people can say what they want about Coquelin and Elneny, but they're just not that quality that you require for a club of Arsenal's stature. You know, you need someone who is much more convincing and who can give competition to the starting lineup, Xhaka and Ramsey in this case. But I don't know if I would sacrifice getting a midfielder or even a central defender over a goalkeeper. I think Cech has one more season after this in him. And if the coming summer, we can reinforce the outfield, then next summer we can go in and spend the big bucks on the next big goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I agree with you, but I agree and disagree with you. I think we need reinforcements elsewhere. At what cost do we replace Cech with? you know, 15 to 20 million wouldn't be bad, but realistic, it's not going to happen. Because the price of what price of keepers are. Who was that guy? AC Milan, Donnarumma. Like he wants to be out, and according to latest news, he wants out. But we'd never afford him. Yeah, well, we'd afford him, but we'd never go for him.
Yeah, we simply couldn't afford him. I mean, what's happening right now with him, and you know, with his agent causing a little bit of a stir. I mean, he wants to get that contract annulled, and you know, I mean, it just shouts that okay, this guy wants to go somewhere else. But he's, I think he's making like 6 million euros a year right now. There's no way we can top that. And I mean, I wouldn't want to top that because that would mean breaking of the weight structure and then you wreak havoc in the rest of the squad. There has to be that consistency and there has to be that sort of performance-based contracts. I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before. I don't understand why we don't do that more and why everything has to be, you know, consistent. Why is it not based on performance? So it's a big question mark for me.
Yeah. Savvy, I'll go to you with the Ozil and Sanchez, because I just found an interesting stat, which was quite interesting, actually. So key passes per match, Ozil leads it with 46 key passes.
Yeah. Sanchez is 40.
Sanchez actually number four on 40, and De Bruyne 50, and Fabregas at 47. Tell you what, that's not bad.
Yeah, that's clearly not bad, and that's these stats show that they are creating and we are not scoring the chances, which is not the case. So these stats are just stats. They are not showing us the clear picture. The reality is, I think Ozil is creating enough. Ozil is doing his job really well, but Sanchez, if you say attacking-wise or creative as a creative player, I think he's doing well. But he's not playing for the team. So that obviously brings the confidence down of the other players. And it affects the team. And it shows because he's least bothered about helping the team defensively right now, which was the forte of his play when he first joined us. He used to track back. He used to give that enthusiasm. He was a player who he was a leader who would just do everything and keep running. But that's all gone from him. And he's just giving the ball away. And sometimes he tries to be too clever. There are instances, like I think someone mentioned, he took the shot when the player was standing 1 yard away. It's always better to pass the ball or try to do something else because you know it is going to be that shot is going to be blocked. So that is something that shows that he's playing for himself. He's not doing anything for the team. If it works out for him, he gets a goal or assist, he gets the credit. Otherwise, also, if you listen to the media, they'll say Sanchez is doing his all. The team is just not good enough, or they'll criticize Arsene Wenger. But right now, he's just not playing for the team, and he already has a foot out of the club, and it's better to drop him at this point. And I think Ozil is great. His job well, but sometimes creatively we become too reliant on him. We have to be creative as a team. We just can't rely on one player to be creative. We have to make runs if you're giving the ball to him, and we are just standing and expecting him to create the chance and then we'll score. But obviously football doesn't work like that. We have to create as a team, we score as a team, so that is something that needs to change.
Okay. Any of you boys, Tony, Schwinn, any else that on the West Ham go?
I want to talk about Alexis a little bit more. I think there's no denying that he gives the ball away as much as he does, especially in the last three games. I think he's given the ball 80-plus times. But I think if you look at his statistics, and that's where this conversation started, from last season, maybe there would be a lot of similarities. You know, maybe it won't be 80 over three games. Maybe it'll be 60 or 70. I think we're being extremely harsh on him. And now, I'm not trying to be an apologist for him because the man doesn't want to be at our club. And I couldn't give a fuck about him. He should have gone. Anyone who doesn't want to wear the shirt shouldn't be there. But now that he is there and he has been playing, I think that there has been unnecessary criticism to an extent because of the fact that he doesn't want to sign a contract. I mean, what Savvy just said, you can sense a little bit of that bias creeping in. I'm not accusing Savvy of of having that bias. I'm just saying that, you know, you can see when you're talking about Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, that there's already that divide, you know. People tend to see what they want to see. And because Mesut Ozil is more likely to sign the contract, if reports are to be believed, then people are warming up to the idea of him being around, and then they look at what they want to look at. I mean, it's the same thing with Granit Xhaka. People only see what they think he's good at, and then they only see what they think that he's bad at when he does that. So
we won't get into Xhaka too much because Carl's going to join us on Sunday. No. Look, and I'm happy to talk about it. But Carl also wanted to have an input there, and I don't think it's the same input that I've got. So wait for Carl.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to go too much into Xhaka, but I was just trying to give a similarity.
Yeah, I know, mate. Yeah.
But I mean, if you look at this season, I mean, Savvy made a point that, you know, he's not been defending as much. He's not been tracking back. Ever since we've switched to a three-defender system, we have left Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez, and whoever's playing striker up top. You know, just having those two players up top, if one of them is dropping deep to defend, won't do the job. That's why we have those wing-backs who can give cover to, you know, the center defenders who are not playing in the middle. So Nacho Monreal and, you know, in our case, Koscielny on the right, is getting that cover from Bellerin and from Kolasinac, respectively. So Alexis Sanchez's duty in this formation isn't necessarily to drop deep and defend, unless you're playing one of the bigger teams. So I understand what Savvy's trying to say, but ever since this tactical shift, we are leaving those three players up top so that they can provide an outlet. They can stretch the field up top, whether it be in the center or you know, across the width, and provide that outlet. So I understand the frustration. I don't think he should be playing for the club simply because he doesn't want to play for the club. But when we are looking at the games, despite our frustrations, I think it's only fair to see these things objectively. And I think criticism against Alexis Sanchez is, to an extent, a bit too harsh.
I had a conversation with one of our followers on Twitter the other day, and we were talking about the same thing. We'd like to actually see what his assists and goals were this time last season compared to what it is now.
I mean, you're right. You're right. His output has not been the same. I mean, and I mean that plays into the argument that he shouldn't be playing because he doesn't want to play for the club. You know, it's a losing battle that we're playing. We're trying to convince him that, you know, this is the place you want to be at, but he just doesn't want to be there. So there's no denying that output has reduced. There's no denying that the quality has reduced. But I'm saying the way he operates is still pretty much the same. Last year, we didn't give it too much attention because this contract situation wasn't looming over our head. It was Alexis Sanchez. He played for Arsenal. There was no indication that he's not going to sign a new contract. So when he did try those flicks and tricks, when he did try those shots with a defender 2 feet ahead of him, we didn't pick on it. You know what I'm saying? It's selective distortion.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Just a quick query, though. On compared to last year, and you put yourself back last year compared to this year, who were your standout players this year as you see now?
Wow, I mean, that's a tough one. I was very excited for Granit Xhaka, I'm not going to lie. I watched a little bit of him in the Bundesliga, so I was excited to see how he features into the squad. And I don't remember, to be honest. I mean, last season feels a little bit of a blur. But, I mean, I'm always excited to watch Mesut Ozil. There's no denying, and I love watching the guy.
Last season for me, I thought, and I'll probably get a bit of criticism, but I thought he had a really good season last year, was Walcott. I thought he played all right. Sanchez was a standout. Ozil was a standout. These are just players that keep coming to mind. This season, I look at Ramsey, I look at Jack, and Lacazette, Monreal, Kolasinac. I don't have Sanchez in my top this season, and that's for me. That's how much he's dropped off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to argue with that because you're absolutely right. He doesn't want to be there. It's very much visible from his playing style, from his output. I'm just saying that if you personally and the fans personally had the same attitude and the same mental perception of Alexis Sanchez as they have today, and if they had the same thing a year ago, then the script would be similar. The narrative would be similar, that this man gives the ball away too much. But that contract situation was not looming over our heads. We were not dejected by the fact that Alexis Sanchez wants to leave our club and join a rival. that has only started at the start of this season when he realized he's probably not going to sign a contract. So the malice mm-hmm. intended towards him has magnified because of that. Understandably so. But it's our job as, you know, as people who talk about the club to remain objective. And if we are criticizing him, then we should also offer a perspective onto the other side and see what that's all about. So that's what I'm trying to do here.
Yep. I understand. Tony, you got any dad on that?
I pretty much agree with everything Schwinn said. I know he's not been amazing, but I say this all the time. Football's all about narratives. And at the moment, we have a very negative We Hate Sanchez narrative. So regardless of what he does, it's criticism. Like no one really said, "Oh, great ball for the assist against Southampton." They said, "Oh, he was shit for the other 89 minutes."
Mm.
He's always been like that. He plays in moments. There was a point you were saying about I haven't looked at his output this year compared to last year. Obviously, last year's was better, but he was playing up top for a lot of it in the early stage of the season, especially. So goals scored are always going to be higher. And just because of the positions he took up and he wouldn't have to drop back so much or wasn't going wide so much, his assists were also likely to be higher last year because he was playing as a 9/false 9. So, again, you're not comparing like for like there.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. It's fucking shits me, to be honest. But anyway, it's had he signed a contract 2 months ago and he still is, would he be getting the criticism?
Nope. 100% no. They would be going, wow, what an assist. He changed against Southampton. He changed the game. No one else looked like unlocking the defence and he put in a killer cross and Giroud put a good header in, whereas now it's, fuck's sake, he gave the ball away, what was it, 28 times. Oh, and one of the times he completed an assist. It's literally the same thing. I'm saying the same thing in different tones, but that's what I'm saying about narrative in football.
They'd be saying after the Southampton game that this is why he's worth 350k a week, you know, just because that's how much I'm guessing he would have been getting paid. So instead of saying that he's not in it and, you know, he didn't perform for 89 minutes and he just turned up for that 1 minute, they'd just be saying, well, this is what 350k gets you, that you know, turning the game, that magic that's required to turn the game.
Mm-hmm. You got any dad on that, Savvy?
No, I think I agree. I have to say, I think the problem with Alexis Sanchez right now for me is his attitude. I think the people at the club, the players at the club, I think they've had enough of his attitude. And that brings the team's morale down. And it's clearly seen on the field when the team is playing. When he has the ball, when he... I think not many people see that. But he's not passing the ball to other players many times. He's just trying to be on his own, or he passes to. If he has a pass where he has two players standing, let's say one is Ozil and one is Ramsey, definitely if the pass to Ramsey is easier, still he's going to give the ball to Mesut Ozil. And otherwise, he'll try to give the ball to Mesut Ozil. So that's something that his attitude, I think it's bringing our team play down. That is my issue with him. The quality, I think he can pop up with a goal and assist anytime. The quality is obviously there, and the problem is his attitude. And we already know that he wants out of the club. So definitely that also brings the negativity towards him. I agree to that. But my problem with him is attitude. He knows he's here right now, so his mind should be at our club and he should be trying his best for Arsenal. But clearly, he's not doing that for me.
Well, I don't know what happened last summer, but it was a deadline day. He wanted out. Manchester City supposedly reports they made a big offer and Sanchez wanted to go. At that point, he was out. He was wanting to go. He was never going to continue trying this season because he wanted to be gone. I'd like to know what the discussions were throughout the summer of last summer in the transfer window with Wenger and himself. We'll never, no one will be ever privileged to him. But you know what I mean? Like Wenger said, I'm talking him into it. He's going to stay, and then. Transfer deadline day, and all of a sudden we hear Manchester City's offering a big offer. the whole situation has just been so fucking bizarre to me that I only have to blame one person, and unfortunately that's Lango. I think he should have handled it a lot better.
I'm just going to say one thing on that, Tez. Arsene Wenger was once asked that what is the biggest strength you can have as a manager and as a football player, and he said loyalty. And he said, and then he was asked what is the biggest mistake a manager or a football player can make, and he said loyalty. So that's what it all boiled down to. I mean, I think he had a genuine feeling that Alexis Sanchez wants to stay. And that the club will show ambition. I mean, we don't know the dynamics at play, as you said. We're not privy to that. But, I mean, if you put yourself in either of those guys' shoes, I think you can make a reasonable argument to suggest why Alexis Sanchez would want to stay or go, and why Arsene Wenger would think that Alexis Sanchez wants to stay or go. There's reasonable arguments on all sides of that situation. I just think that irrespective of everything else, if a player does not want to stay at your club, if he doesn't want to put on that shirt, doesn't matter who they are, they should be gone. Because we've seen what he's done to the fabric of the locker room. This is nothing against Alexis Sanchez. It's just human psyche. And seeing what Manchester City are doing, I cannot help but imagine that if Alexis Sanchez was at their club, and if he was not being played as often as he would have liked, then maybe that club would be in a worse situation than they're in right now. I mean, they're flying. And if they complete an invincible season somehow, in some dramatic fashion, which I still don't think they will, then maybe it would be such a kick up our arse that we could have stopped them from doing from completing an invincible season by selling them Alexis Sanchez, and maybe we didn't. And that's what helped them complete that feat. So I think it's
we've spoke about it on this podcast before, and I still find it hard on where he'd even fit in at City. At the moment, where would he fit in?
At the moment, it's hard to say, because who do you take out based on form? I mean, Sterling is flying. Leroy Sané cannot be stopped. And Aguero and Jesus are being rotated to play centrally. So it's difficult. And, of course, the big thing about Alexis Sanchez that City might want to consider is that he's not cup-tied for the Champions League. So if City do go in for him, then, you know, he can feature for the Champions League and give a little more depth. So I can see why Pep would want to bring him in. But at the same time, Pep is who sold him from Barcelona because of his attitude and because of, you know, some other things that happened between them. So everyone knows how volatile of a player he is. He is magical, but at the same time, there can be instances where he drags the club down. So I'm sure Pep would be wary of that. I think, if anything, he would like to bring him in next summer. But I just think that this whole situation should have never been real, because if a player doesn't want to be there, then he should have been sold.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you got anything else to add on that, Tony, or are we right to move on?
No, I think we've done it to death, really, and it's going to keep recurring until he eventually leaves, so save it all for another day.
Righto. Okay, just on a bit of lighter news, and the ultimate ranking of fandoms, from sports to entertainers, celebrities to brands. The Fandom 250 list is in, and Arsenal fans didn't top the list. We got 67th as the best fans in the world. Now, no other Premier League team made this list. However, to give you a bit of a rundown on who was the top one, so it's a bit of a mixed one and whatnot, the Ohio State...
Yeah, you had to, didn't you?
Buckeyes.
You had to. Just for everyone who's listening, we had this conversation before we started recording, and I told Tez not to mention the Buckeyes. Go Hoosiers!
So they topped the list at number one as the best fans, and it was obviously, you know, Star Wars is there, their fans are there, Game of Thrones. So Arsenal fans, yeah, we're the best. We're number 67th in the list, so just a bit of lighter news. Okay, Newcastle game. Now, Theo Walcott, he's out, Rams is out, and Mustafi has a cloud over him. Tony, where do we go from here, mate, with the Newcastle coming up?
It's a difficult one, because does he change back to five, which has served us so well at home? Yes, to a back five. I know we lost to Man United, but what was it, something like 15 in a row wins before then, or since we changed to the back three? Whatever you call it. So does he go back? Look, Kolasinac comes back in. I think he just needed a rest. For me, Koscielny's got to be dropped. Last week, there was a question mark over it. Now, I don't even think there's a question mark, but as I said on last week's pod, the issue that comes with it is that if Mustafi is out, then you're losing two of your main three, so it'd be Monreal and two people that you would consider not in our first choice. Whoever they be, Chambers, Holding, Mertesacker, or whoever it may be. Bellerin needs to be shipped off to fight in a war somewhere, because I just don't want to see him on the pitch at the moment. I'd like to see Debuchy play, especially against his old side. But I don't think it'll happen. I think Bellerin will play. And then in front of that, it's interesting to see who drops out, because if he does go back to a back five, I'm not sure if he will. I'm still 50-50 in my head whether he'll go back to a back five or not. But if he does, then Xhaka's place is automatic. And you'd assume after Jack's performance he would play. But then that would mean dropping in Iwobi, which Wenger doesn't like to do. I can't see Sanchez being dropped. As I said, I think after the other day, a lot of the moaning about him came from nowhere, really. He tried to unlock a pack defence, it didn't work. So I could see Lacazette coming back in, because the game will be a bit more open just because of a bigger pitch. So I can see it being Ozil, Alexis and Lacazette, regardless of whether we play back five or a back three. They will be our attacking three.
Okay. Schwinn?
Yeah, I expect a back four. Similar team to what we played against West Ham. I expect Kolasinac to start, as Tony said. I think he just needed a rest. Hector could do with a kick up his arse, but I don't think Debuchy is quite as ready as we want him to be, in all fairness. So maybe give him a week or two and we'll see him feature in the Premier League. I think Wenger's just waiting for that EFL game against West Ham to see how Debuchy copes up with the Premier League side. And maybe that will give him a more solid indication whether, you know, he's ready to start in the Premier League. Up top, as Tony said, Alexis, Mesut, and Lacazette. In midfield, I think it will be Jack, Xhaka, and I think we can expect Coquelin or Elneny instead of Iwobi. So similar formation, Nacho, Koscielny to start at center back, check and goal. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay. Savvy?
Yeah, even I'm expecting us to continue with the back four. I think we need to drop Bellerin, but I think Wenger doesn't prefer Debuchy. I wouldn't mind Maitland Niles over there, because he's right-footed and he's doing a good job at left wing back or left back, you could say. But I wouldn't mind him at right back, because I think he can cement his place over there with Bellerin not performing, and it will clearly give a kick up to Bellerin to perform well, because he's also a young player and Maitland Niles has been doing really well recently. So I wouldn't mind him here, but I don't think Wenger is going to do that. But then I don't want Iwobi to start. I would like to see Welbeck starting in place of him, maybe shifting Sanchez to the right side or starting Welbeck at the right side. But yeah, Welbeck for Iwobi. Otherwise, Kolasinac comes in. I want Chambers to start. I've been wanting that from past few games. Let's see if that happens in this game, because we know about Koscielny's Achilles problem. And Mustafi, we don't know if he's going to play or not. So maybe Chambers get a start, because Newcastle haven't been doing really well recently, and we are at home where we have been doing well. So we could see Chambers starting for us in the Premier League for the first time this season.
Yeah, and I've just wrote a note here on Chambers, because, and I'll stick with you, Savvy. How would a young player feel? He's just signed a new contract with Arsenal. He's a young player, and he hasn't got to start yet. What has the kid got to do?
Yeah, I think he's been doing well in Europa League too. The last game he did well when he played. The other game also, where he played only the first half, he did well there. His loan spell was, I think personally for him, that was a successful loan spell, because He defended really well, and probably if you would have asked Boro fans, they would have said he was one of the best players for them that season. So, I think he has done enough to at least get a chance, and then we'll see how he performs. He deserves a chance.
What about you, Tony? What's your take on Chambers?
I like Callum Chambers, but you've got to earn your place in the team. And he's done well in the few minutes he's played, but he has barely played. I wouldn't mind him starting. I just think, again, people want change for change's sake. And I'm as guilty as anyone because I've just said drop. Like I think Koscielny needs to be dropped, not only because of his injury, because he's been awful for the last few weeks, but we didn't concede, and most people have come out against West Ham, and most people have come out of the game saying the defenders are shit, the keeper's shit. Didn't concede. Like, that's changing for change's sake. If anything, the changes should be at the other end. But no one's really mentioned that.
We didn't score.
So, I think with Chambers, I wouldn't mind him playing. But when people say, oh, what has he got to do? The kid can't do anymore. Well, he can. He's played a game against Norwich. I think he played the majority of the game. Didn't make anyone think, God, this guy needs to play. Look, I don't want to keep bringing it back to Jack Wilshere, but Jack Wilshere played 6 or 7 games when he was man in a match in pretty much every one of them, and then now he's just broke back into the team. Callum Chambers has been injured for a lot of the time and played 45 minutes here and there, completed maybe 2 matches. Look at the comparison. They're both in the exact same position. They're both young English players that are coming back from a loan spell and done okay on their loan spell, nothing exceptional, nothing awful. So that's where you've got to look. Jack was exceptional for 7, or not exceptional, very good for 7 games, and now he's earned his place. Chambers has been good for half a game here and there.
Different positions, huh?
No, I'm not comparing the players, but I'm comparing... I'm not comparing Jack to Callum, but I'm saying that that's how you earn a place in the team, is by being one of, if not the best player in your side when you're playing, for a consistent amount of time. Not having, oh, he was quite good for that half, but then he came off injured. Or you've also got to remember he's not been fit for most of this season. He played 45 minutes against Doncaster, came off injured. He played in another Europa League game, came off injured. He came back from the summer injured. So, as I said, the way you have to earn your place in the team. And I'm not comparing him to Jack in terms of player. I'm saying Jack earned his place back in the team by being our best player in the 7 or 8 games he played, or at least in 6 of them, whereas Chambers has been goodish in 3 games. It's not comparable.
Since you brought up Jack, we'll digress to something that I told you boys to have a listen to earlier, and they're good people and they're good lads. They do a podcast, the Bergkamp Wonderland. However, a bloke by the name of Jason, he absolutely hammered Jack on the podcast. Did you hear it, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of it because I know one of the guys that's on there. I've never listened to it before. I don't really listen to podcasts, which is not good advertisement for what we're doing. But so I listened to it this morning because you highlighted it. And no disrespect to the guy, I don't know him. He could be an absolute genius, but he was talking absolute bullshit. This is not me defending Jack. Like, the key line you have to look at, and as soon as he said this, my opinion, like the rest of what he said, became irrelevant. He said, oh, you don't offer him a contract till he's proved himself because you don't know what the money's worth. I half understand that. That bit makes sense. But then someone else, one of the other people on the podcast, said, okay, you let him go for free. Who do you replace him with? And they said, oh, he doesn't need replacing because he's not won us a league. Okay, let's not replace Sanchez. He hasn't won us a league, and let's not replace Ozil. And then we'll end up with no players. And then he'll go, oh, the squad's too small. Why do we keep playing kids? I'm sure sometimes people bring up these things for argument's sake, and he can't actually believe that you don't have to replace a player when a player goes, regardless of their ability. Even if, like, Mertesacker's going to go, we're going to need another centre-back, you need another body. Whenever someone goes, you need a replacement. So for him to say, oh, well, he only plays 15, 20 games a year, you don't need a replacement for that, you do. The same guy also moaned about Santi. When someone said, we miss Santi, oh, he never won us the league, we don't miss him.
Yeah.
That is not how football... anyone with 2 eyes in their head that understands football can watch a game and understand that we miss Santi Cazorla. It's literally as simple as that.
And I'll just recap on what he said. He said, look, they're probably nice people. They're nice guys. Like, and it's a good podcast, so I'll give them a bit of a plug at Burkamp Wonderland. But he and even the host, I can't leave his name now, he was absolutely going, are you fucking for real? And he said, like, seeing he's 33 years of age, he's done. He's done and dusted. He hasn't played with us for 12 months. We haven't missed him. And we don't need him.
Right. So, to be fair, I personally think he's done. So I would agree with that point. But to say we haven't missed him and because he never won anything for us, it's absolute nonsense. There's so many players that just because they never won anything don't mean the team is not a worse team without them. As I said, if you say, we don't miss anyone that hasn't won the league, get rid of our entire team, scrap the wage bill, and play the under-18s, or you're paying $2,000 a week. Because we don't miss anyone because they've not won anything, they've not won the league. So get rid of them all. Fuck it. Let's just give the money back to the fans, get relegated into League Two, Conference, and play the 18-year-olds. That's essentially what he's saying. I know I'm exaggerating a point to prove a point, but he literally said, he hasn't won the league for us, we don't miss him. Watch football. Like, I always say this, and I've been saying this from day one of the podcast. Watch football with your eyes. If you watch football with your eyes, you can see that Arsenal miss Santi Cazorla. And as I said, I'm trying to keep off Jack because obviously everyone knows that I'm a big Jack Wilshere fan. But his point on Jack was absolute nonsense, and his point on Cazorla was worse.
Just because you mentioned Jack with the on one point that he made, and it actually raised my eyebrows a bit because I didn't realise that, and I haven't checked whether his stats were right or not. He actually quoted that. I think he said Jack had played 131 games in 9 years.
It sounds about right. But he spent a year out on loan, 2 years out injured. And look, I know it's not Jack's fault, it's not the club's fault. But I mean, another thing he went on, he doesn't get goals, he doesn't score goals and get assists, so we don't need him. Okay, get rid of our centre-back. Because he kept saying, Jack was our best player the other night, but he was awful because he didn't get a goal or an assist.
He didn't get an goal.
Okay, so everyone else might as well be shit. Like, you might as well just be shit every game because if you don't get a goal or assist, apparently you can't play well.
It's 2 weeks till the 1st of January and he can talk to other clubs. Who knows what he'll do. We've put in so much effort with Jack over 9 years or 10 years or however long it's been. Actually longer because he came through our youth. But what do we do? What do we offer?
Wenger came out today and said we're going to start contract negotiations at the end of the month. One of the saving graces, if there is one, is I think that's too late, personally. Not because it's Jack, for any player, I think that's too late. But one of the saving graces is I really don't think he'll go abroad, which means he can't actually talk to anyone till May. Officially, look, believe me, if he wants to go, he's already been speaking to people. But officially, he can speak to foreign clubs from January the 1st, but I don't really see that as a viable option. So he can't really speak to anyone until the last month of his contract, which will be the 1st of June. But in reality, because of the season ending in May, it will be May. So it's not as bad as it looks in terms of he can speak to people at the start of January. Wenger has said today that they will open contract negotiations towards the end of the month.
Okay. Schwinn, did you caught it, mate? What was your take on it all?
Yeah, I mean, let me preface this by saying that I'm a mate of Jason, so I mean, I know him a decent amount, and we in fact had a nice Skype chat about a week ago. As a concept, what he said, I think, was spot on. I think if you remove Jack Wilshere from this debate and insert anyone else from our club into that, I think as a concept what he said to an extent was right. I know he sort of doubled down on a couple of things, especially when he mentioned Santi, and I think what Tony said about that was spot on, because there's no denying that we do miss Santi Cazorla. Does he fit into the current system of three defenders? Maybe, maybe not, but only, you know, you can only tell once you see him there. But there's no denying that his presence, his leadership, his acumen, his experience is lacked. In the dressing room, I also think he would be someone who could control Alexis when Alexis is throwing a tantrum. So his presence itself is a big miss from the training ground and from the dressing room. But as a concept, I don't think Jason made any wrong points. I think what he was trying to say was that despite the fact that you know, Jack Wilshere has been out for a long time. He was our best player against West Ham. But that one moment that could have won us the game, which was his shot that, you know, went over the bar nine yards from goal, albeit from his weaker foot, could have changed the game. And when you're giving someone a 100K a week contract or something that, you know, I think he's on 80K right now and he wants a little bit of a raise, obviously, if he's signing a new contract, that you cannot justify that if there's no output. There has to be output. There has to be something that is delivered. You know, he was our best player, but did he have that, that through ball that split the defense open? He didn't have that goal, which could have gotten us the 3 points maybe. But I think as a concept, he made a few solid points. I think there's arguments on both sides. I'm a big Jack Wilshere fan. I will go back to my argument of performance-based contracts. I still don't understand why football clubs don't do that. It just boggles my mind that everyone needs to make the same amount of money. Not everyone, but a person needs to make the same amount of money every week despite how they play or they perform, which is just bollocks to me. I want him to sign. What I would like to do personally would be to offer him a contract for 18 months on what he is making right now, with an incentive for every game that he plays, that if he has a goal or an assist, then he makes some extra money based on, you know, on the performance. If he's not playing, if he doesn't feature, then he makes that standard 80K. And after 18 months, if he's able to prove himself, then we give him a good big contract, whether that's 120, 140, depending on whatever he justifies. So I would like us to get creative with our contracts. But coming back to Jason's point, I think he made a good debate and he made a good point in terms of concept. I think he got a little carried away, perhaps, because everyone else on ABW, I think Jeff was on there, Danny was on there, and Gimli, the other host that you were talking about, I think they were all against him. So maybe he went a little too far in his argument. But I think as a concept, he made a few good points.
I would play it on the podcast, but I don't want the boys to get upset with me. So, I haven't asked permission or anything. But anyway, look, and I'll give him another plug. Burkamp Wonderland, about the 16th, 17th minutes of the last podcast. You can listen to it. Savvy, you got any add on it, mate?
Yeah, I think when the guy's saying that Drag has played 131 games in 9 years, you have to look at his age. He's just 25. And from, I think, 16 to 22 years, he was still a young player who was coming through. And you wouldn't have expected him to play as much as we wanted because he was just too young to play in the Premier League or wherever we were playing. So that is harsh criticism of Jack Wilshere. And especially seeing the way he's performing right now, I think he's doing really well. And he's probably proving his worth to the club that how good I can be. I know he doesn't get enough goals or assists, but his passing, his work rate and his desire and his commitment for the club is top notch. And I think it is the best in our squad. So we clearly need those kind of players. And I clearly think we need Jack Wilshere, and we should be aggressive in wanting him to sign the contract because we clearly need him in the situation we are right now. We don't have players who want to play for our club, and there are not many quality players. If you look at our central midfielders, Kokulan, El Neni, I think there are only three good central midfielders at our club right now. They are Ramsey, Xhaka and Jack. So we can't let him go. And if we let him go, we probably will need two central midfielders more because we know Cazorla won't be playing again. And the criticism of Santi Cazorla, I think that is also very uncalled for. He didn't win the title for us, but he won the FA Cup. And he, I think since Fabregas left, I think the move to put Santi at the creative central midfielder position was the best move by Arsene Wenger. And it clearly worked. And we clearly miss him. I think he's one of the best players we have had recently. And any team, I think, wherever he would have played, would have missed a player of Santi Cazorla's quality. So I think this criticism of Jack and Cazorla is, I think, really uncalled for.
Okay. What's your take, Tony, on an 18th month contract, as Schwinn was talking about?
Well, in reality, no contract's going to run out in January. So if he means 18 months from January, that's a year extension.
you're just asking for trouble because you're not showing faith in the player. So as soon as he has some good performances, he thinks, well, they didn't back me when I was in need. So when they're in need, they can go fuck themselves. Jack probably, hopefully, wouldn't think like that because he's an Arsenal boy. But it's not similar to the Ashley Cole situation. But you can't go around pissing players off. And also, on the contracts are heavily incentivized. Just because the papers report them or the press report them as a basic salary, this much per week, that much per week, they are heavily, heavily incentivized. So, as I said, don't obviously always just read what you hear as he earns this much a week. I've seen Premier League players' contracts, and you wouldn't believe what goes into them. Even small things, turning up at media days is a bonus in their contract. And they always do it because they get dragged along after training, but that will get reported in their basic wage because they always do it. So you get appearance fees, you do get goal and assist bonuses. The other point I don't pick up on is saying, oh, I'll give him a bonus if he gets a goal and assist. It's not an incentive for him because the role we want him to play is, I think someone brought up the term before, of a hockey assist. He'll open it up and bring other players more space. I mean, I don't know how you could do it. You can't incentivize someone on completed passes, but his game, he's never going to be the guy that gets 10 goals, 10 assists and whatnot. And you don't want him to be that guy. We've got guys that can do that. You want him to unlock defences, and like even in his best year, so his first full year, he got Young Player of the Year. He had that performance against Barcelona. Okay, a key example, just to pick up an example, and this is mainly for what Schwinn said. That Barcelona game, he was exceptional, and there's no one around the world that would doubt that. He was absolutely unbelievable playing against Iniesta, Xavi, and got man of the match by an absolute mile, no debate. Even the Barcelona players, Messi came and asked him for his shirt at the end of the game. It was at that level. No goal, no assist, no bonus. Did he have a bad game? That's what I'm saying with the incentives. You can't base absolutely everyone on goals and assists because he will never play better than he did against Barcelona. But according to the contract metric that Swin just proposed, he might as well have not been there.
Mm-hmm. You want to go on that, Swin?
Yeah, I mean, see, I understand what Tony's saying, and I understand, you know, how incentivized contracts are. Maybe the examples I gave were wrong. What I was trying to suggest was that we should get creative with our contracts. Okay, maybe someone like Jack Wilshere doesn't necessarily fit the profile because of, you know, his output. But at the same time, you know, I understand the love for Jack. Everyone does. Everyone loves him at Arsenal. All the fan base loves him. But we need to understand that the team needs to be, and the club needs to be put number one. And for someone who is prone to injury, for someone who is prone to not perform consistently, he has had some you know, magnificent performances. That Barcelona one obviously comes to mind. But we cannot leverage Jack's love itself for the club to be the ultimate you know, reason for us to give him a contract. I'm sorry, I understand the arguments on both sides, and I'm still sitting on the fence. But I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate here, and I'm just trying to get into Jason's mind and trying to think what he was thinking. So I cannot make a sound argument against what Tony said because he makes good points, and I'm still on the fence, as I said. I just think that it's not as black and white as it seems. I think there's way more gray area in the middle, and I also think that we won't offer him a contract because if we wanted to, we would have already. I think this late into the season, I don't think we will offer him a contract. We would have secured that much earlier.
And you hit the nail on the head. You know, just about every Arsenal fan loves Jack. He is Arsenal. You know, he's a prodigy of our youth. He's come through the system, but you know, we all love him. But if it wasn't Jack we were talking about, if it was a Shaka, would we all be having the same opinion?
I mean, my argument against that is take away Jack Wilshere and call him Bobby Foreigner, but give him the same abilities and performance he has, everyone would want him to re-sign. You can, again, it's comparable to Thomas Rosicky. If Thomas Rosicky had have been 25, everyone would have wanted him to re-sign. So for me, I am, obviously the fact that he is Jack Wilshere and apparently seems to love Arsenal does come into it. But it could be anyone. And if you just literally look at his performance. So Wenger's obviously said to him when he's come back in the summer, prove yourself and earn a contract. With what he has done, I think, as I said, even taken away, if it was Jack Wilshere, everyone would want him to sign. And also on Schwinn's point, I can 100% guarantee you Arsenal will offer Jack Wilshere a new contract.
Well, I would love that. I mean, I would love to see Jack stick around, so I hope I'm proven wrong. But I think
That's not a dig. I'm just saying, obviously, you said you don't think we will. I guarantee you a contract will be offered.
I know it's not a dig. I'm just saying that I would gladly be proven wrong, because if we are giving him that sort of, if we are giving him a contract, that means you're investing trust in him, and I would love that, because he's an Arsenal boy. There's no denying that. But yeah, I mean, it's a good discussion, I feel. You know, as I said, I was playing the devil's advocate, trying to get into Jason's mind and split hairs. But I think it makes for a good discussion, and it's something that I think divides the fan base. So it's something we need to all look out for.
Okay. Right, Anya, let's move on to a lighter subject. Well, no.
We have the luxury for lighter subjects on this pod.
We actually do. I tweeted out a little tweet earlier in the week, Tony, that Griezmann may be looking at coming to Arsenal. Did you say, what was your...
That wasn't made up at all, was it?
What that was all about.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone that isn't on Twitter or saw it, what seems to happen is loads of people saw that but didn't see the subsequent tweet. We've noticed that, I mean, I get tiny bits of information from the club. Nothing major. I've also not been wrong yet on anything. But as I said, I don't come with transfer scoops. I told everyone the reason Chamberlain would leave before he left, and every single person disagreed with me, and I was proved right. All minor things. It's nothing worth. I don't class myself as an in the know. But what we've noticed recently is every time I say anything, it seems to, within 10 minutes, multiple other, I'm doing this with bracket fingers, highly respected in the know accounts, seem to be slightly changing the wording and breaking it themselves. So in our group chat, I asked if anyone else had mentioned it or if it was just me seeing things, and everyone had agreed that they'd seen the same thing. So we concocted a something ridiculous that is never going to happen, and see if it got copied. So that's all it was. And we tweeted it, and within 5 minutes, we tweeted that it was a load of nonsense and what we was doing. And we also tweeted pictures to prove it, and it wasn't that we started a rumour and then got slaughtered, so we was backtracking. We showed pictures of our group conversation that were before the tweet. So, yeah, that's all it was.
And just on the tweet, how good was it, eh? 224 likes, 51 retweets, yeah, and 57 comments. I'm going to concoct another one next week, I think. These in the know accounts, they just, I don't know whether they know what the go is. You know, they call themselves their premium in the know accounts and that. But fuck me dead, some people don't mind jumping on the bandwagon, do they? Huh?
Yeah, I think what it is, this is my personal opinion, and it could be completely wrong, but I think there are some people that have absolutely no information, and they just tweet nonsense to try and get followers. There are other people that get information, and then they try and big it up, and they make a whole story around it, again, to try and get more popular. And then there are others that get a bit of information, and they tweet what they know. And they don't sort of go too much beyond that, and maybe it doesn't achieve the followers that it does of the accounts who seem to tweet every little detail. But I think usually, again, from what I know, very few people know everything. So when someone's telling you the team, like, because usually they'll have one person within the club that they know. So when someone's telling you team news, injury news, transfer news, contract renewals, the amount of how much has been offered with every contract. As I said, if you know one person in the club, that one person isn't going to be privy to all that information. So they may know one person that gives them team news, but then they get a lot of followers because of that, and then they feel like they have to add more. So then they start talking about contract stuff and transfer stuff, and in reality, they don't know anything about it. And I that's what I've found happens from people I know that do know people, but then they've started to add in other things. And it seemingly is only done for followers because they've been proved wrong time and time again. And you know that they don't know anyone aside from the person that is their original source, so to speak.
Mm. Okay. And, I've got nothing. I can't tell you where to go or who to follow, but all I can suggest is follow us at clockand_talk. And if you want the scoop news, go to arsenal.com and wait for it to happen. Okay. I've got a couple of questions, boys. We've got actually a heap of questions. So we'll get through these. I'm sorry, I was on it, but then I went down to that Griezmann tweet to get how many tweets and retweets and stuff. So, Chris McKnight, not really a question, but it was a bit of a piss take, but I'm going to turn it into a bit of a question. I'd like to know if Arsenal can provide doonas and pillows at home games because they bore me shitless. Now, I had a bit of a laugh at it and I thought, yeah, hey, good eye, he's funny little bugger. But are we that boring, Tony?
Not at all.
14 home wins out of 15, and the one loss was probably the most exciting game of the season so far. If that bores you, give up. Like, literally, watch basketball, watch hockey, watch curling, watch ten-pin bowling, tennis, absolutely anything else. Because if you think our home form, if you think we're boring at home, then the game's not for you.
Yeah.
And also, I couldn't care less. If we won all 19 games 1-0 and it was absolutely shite, couldn't care less. We won.
Mm. Okay. Righto, let's get on to some questions. So, Vish, he is a regular, and thank you, Vish, once again, mate. Do we suffer from a lack of creativity to break down stubborn defences due to us having boring old training programs? This is merely a thought, but are we not educated and inspiring players enough to become better? Tony?
What I would say to that is, and this is, again, not a dig at Vish because I've seen loads of people say it, he doesn't have a clue what our training methods are. Our training is all behind closed doors. No one really knows what we do at training. So tired old training methods, I can assure you, it is not. Creativity in general comes from systems and individuals, really. So you could maybe argue that a player's not been creative enough. And it depends what you see as creation. Everyone wants to see this lovely pass and move football, and it's come at a bad time because City are playing really well, but they are playing lovely pass and move football, but you can't do that every week, and especially against a packed defence. I mean, look, well done to City, they got the job done, but against Huddersfield away, West Ham at home, and what was the other, Southampton at home, they weren't pretty. They won all them games, but you could have, had they not won them games, you could have questioned their creativity. It's coming off the back of us playing against two teams that defend really deep and really well. And no, we didn't look creative, but then neither did Chelsea against West Ham, 3-4 days before? I don't want to use a Wenger excuse, but West Ham also did have an extra day on us. So again, it gives them, you'd expect them to be sharper. So I don't, as I said, I think when stuff's going wrong, people look to blame things that they may not necessarily know a lot about, and he's said it in the question that it is speculation. He doesn't know if our training methods are dull and boring. So again, it's not a dig at him, but just when we don't play the way people expect us to, they just want to blame absolutely anything, whether they know about it or not.
Okay, this one for you, Schwinn, from Vish again. We scored nine away goals and have kept two clean sheets in away games. Hang on, that doesn't make sense. Do we attribute this to our formation, or is it in the training? Oh, he's back on the training again. I think Tony just answered that pretty much.
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know. At the end of the day, training's behind closed doors, so it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, just because you don't perform, you know, on a given day, I mean, and you compare it to another performance where it didn't go well, doesn't mean it's because of the same reason. So it's hard to pinpoint your finger on just one thing. I think it's a variety of factors. Yes, I mean, RBA performances have been abysmal this season, but I think it's because of a variety of reasons and not just one. And to better observe that, you need to observe each game individually and not all of them as a whole.
Right. Okay. Love Sharma. How are we? Love Sharma. We should focus on Europa League. Nothing left in the Premier League now. Schwinn.
I don't buy that. I think we have a good opportunity to progress in the Europa League without having to put all our eggs in that basket, considering our opposition. And no disrespect, but I think everyone expects us to move up without trouble. We also have this, you know, this next 6 weeks, I would say, are pivotal, not just for us, but for everyone in the Premier League. There's this congestion of fixtures coming up. It's tough weather. It's family time. A lot of people are not essentially used to it who've come from other leagues because they usually have time off. So the whole dynamic of the Premier League can change a lot during the next 6 weeks. And, of course, we have a four-week transfer window. It's good timing. And, I mean, of course, having to play Europa League only in February, we can assess then. And still, I mean, even if, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks fast forward, even if the table looks exactly the same, we still play our second team in the Europa League. And we continue to fight in the Premier League till the time we have to start those players in the Europa League. So I understand the frustration. Yes, we are in seventh, and yes, we are far apart from, you know, the top four and where we would like to be challenging. But there's still time, and there's a lot that's going to change over the next 6 weeks. So watch that space.
Okay. Now, this was one you tagged me in, Schwinn. I think it was from last week, but I'll go to Savvy on it. Why don't we scout players? Yeah. Oh, this is from Lekka Lamar 10. So he thinks we're going to have Lamar coming shortly. Why don't we scout players from South America? There's so much talent out there. Just look at Porto, and he's rattled off a couple of others. What's your take on this?
I really don't know why we... I think we scout, but it's just that we haven't had... we haven't signed many South American players, so you can say that we don't scout there anymore. But there have been numerous players in recent past where we have been linked to many South American young players who are very highly rated. So I think we scout them. It's just that the deal doesn't go through, or there's some problem, or they don't prefer us, something like that. Because South Americans, they just don't prefer Premier League as their first destination in Europe. So that could be one of the reasons. And I think we scout them. And with the new head of scouting coming in, I think we'll see some more South Americans at Arsenal in coming years. So that's all I can say.
Can I just butt in with that question, please?
Yeah, mate.
It's notoriously difficult to get a player to get a work permit for a player from Brazil, especially young. You have to go on the exceptional talent route, usually not on their caps. And if you're looking at exceptional talent, you're looking at crazy money. So Neymar came in on the exceptional talent to Barcelona. Gabi Jesus came to Man City on exceptional talent. But again, you're looking at £30 million plus for all of these, and they're largely unproven. We don't really have the budget to extend to that. The reason a lot of players seem to end up in Croatia or Ukraine, which would seem random, is due to their work permit laws being a lot less strict. We haven't got the best connections in Brazil. It was one of the things they highlighted when Raul, whatever his name, was brought in. So it's not Zorc, it's not the scout, it's the relations we have there that... that we're not the best of.
Not really.
Sven Middleton. It's the relations there, which obviously Ralph Stanellini was given the credit for the Neymar deal at Barcelona. But in general as well, Brazilians don't really take to the Premier League, and they definitely don't do it directly. I mean, thinking of it, Richarlison's coming from Brazil and done very well so far. And Gabi Jesus has come direct from Brazil. Apart from that, I can't remember the last player that came directly from Brazil to the Premier League, Gilberto Silva, but obviously that's one of us, so you can't say we don't scout him. I mean, there definitely is others, but off the top of my head, people bring up, oh, Coutinho done brilliantly at Brazil. Yeah, he came via Italy, he was in Italy for 3 years, and he had a loan spell in Spain. I can't think of many, and as I said, there has been some, so people feel free to correct me, but it's a Premier League problem, it's not an Arsenal problem.
Okay.
The Texas Gooner, and I'll stick with you on this, Tony. Is it just me, or do we go into these matches against sides with a low block defence with no real plan? Movement is static, we're short on ideas, creativity, and it seems like the ounce of creativity is entirely on the shoulders of Alexis or Ozil.
I think that covers a lot of what we've said. We do struggle against teams that, I'm not going to say part of the bus, because it's also almost kind of a disrespectful term, but defend deep and well is a nicer way of saying it. We do struggle against them teams, especially away. Whether we go into the game with a plan or not, look, I can assure you they do. What that plan is, sometimes you watch it and you think, I don't have a clue what they're trying to do. I've already mentioned it seemed crazy to start Giroud and then play players wide that aren't going to give him any service. So is it a problem we have? Yes. Is there a plan? I can assure you, yes. Is it one that's well thought out or that works? At the moment, no. But it's been a problem that we've had for a long time, and a lot of clubs have it. As I said, using West Ham as an example, Chelsea struggled against the exact same tactic. Tottenham are struggling more this year because they now are a respected team because they've had two good seasons in a row. Teams now accept that a point is a good result against them. They have no ambition to come out at all. And Tottenham have drawn at home to Burnley and West Brom and Swansea. So again, it is a problem we have. It's a problem a lot of the league has. And again, just because of the state we're in at the moment, no one will come out of that West Ham Chelsea West Ham game and say, oh, Conte doesn't plan and he isn't creative and whatnot. And no one's ever criticising Pochettino for having them three home draws against Burnley, West Brom and Swansea, all teams we've beat. So it's a problem, and it's a difficult one. I don't really think it's an accusation that can be levelled at Wenger or anyone else. I think it's just a difficult problem to solve.
It's just the way these smaller teams are setting themselves up in tech.
Yeah, look, does Wenger make mistakes? Absolutely. Could he do more? Possibly. But I don't think it's a case of Arsenal always does this wrong. As I said, I think it's a problem that to break down a stubborn defence that have no real intent on attacking or leaving you absolutely no space, it is difficult for everyone. And again, using the Man City example, they struggled against West Ham at home, they struggled against Huddersfield away, and they struggled against Southampton at home, all due to the same tactics. So even City, who are being labelled as the best Premier League side ever, and if they're not the best, they're in the top five, they still struggle with them tactics. And they've spent X amount on players, which is huge. They've got an unbelievable squad, an unbelievable playing style, but it just shows them tactics are very hard to play against.
I don't want to, and when I was away last week, because I didn't get to watch much football, but did I see the result? City only beat Watford 1-0 or something?
Not Watford. They beat West Ham 2-1, winner in the 80th plus minute.
West Ham, was it? Okay, yeah. So they obviously
80th plus, and same as Southampton, 97th minute winner.
Yeah, so them smaller teams, what I'm getting at is they're setting up like West Ham did to us this week.
Yeah, exactly, and the same as what Southampton did, and West Ham and Southampton. Yeah. Look, City got the job done, and that's the difference between us and them. They're a lot better, and they get the job done. But
True. It's
not like saying, why haven't we got plans? City are blowing these teams away and beating them 4-5, 6-0. No, they're having the same problems. They are just a bit better than us, at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Schwinn, this one to you, mate, from a brilliant follower for us, Glenn Baxter. How long is it going to take someone at the club to realise that this isn't the level we should be? Board isn't going anywhere, nor the players. It will be Wenger eventually. Why does the club fear telling Wenger it's time? Surely the club comes first.
He's very frustrated.
There's a few questions in there too, and I mean, I completely understand the frustration. I'm right there with him. The first thing I would say is that the club has already realised it. Because you can see that there's movement around Wenger, which has just not existed for the last 20 years or something. So we can see that there's an infrastructure being put around around Arsene Wenger, which will help transition him out when the time comes. There's also been reports of Ivan Gazidis moving his office to London Colney so that he can more closely monitor developments and whatever he wants to monitor. I think there's no doubt that the club comes first before anyone, whether it's the owners or a low-level staffer or the players. The club is always number one. But just to single out the manager would be something I would heed caution to. I think it's easy to find a scapegoat. I think the British press is also very good at identifying scapegoats and then sort of perpetuating motions against them. I've always said that I'm not close enough to the club to come to such a strong conclusion. I think a football club is very dynamic. I think it's extremely nuanced. I think there's a lot that goes in and comes out of it that has to be taken with a pinch of salt. So am I Wenger in, Wenger out? I don't know. As I said, I'm not close enough to this, but I can tell you that considering the changes that have been made with regards to Sven and Raul, that the club understands that it is a dinosaur and that it needs to evolve. So I understand the frustration, but rewind 5 weeks ago when we won the North London Derby, everyone was sitting on Wenger's dick because he's the best manager around. So it's temperamental. I understand the frustration. I understand the emotion. All I will say is heed caution, Glenn. Things will be fine.
If an FA Cup, he'll need more than an FA Cup this year.
I love the FA Cup. I think it's a magnificent competition. I'm not just saying that because we won that in the last 3 years and it's sort of been our saving grace, particularly for Wenger. But I think it's a historic cup. You have the whole nation essentially competing for it. Of course, the top team get involved later. But
but I'll put it to you: he doesn't make Champions League and he wins an FA Cup. Where's his position sit?
It's difficult to say because he decides. He signed a 2-year contract. Even if it was a 1-year contract and if he was up for renewal, I think usually it's him who decides whether he's going to stay on or not. So it's hard to say. I mean, I want Champions League, there's no doubt. Whether that's through the Europa League or through, us qualifying in the top four. Because it's essential to track talent and to bring in talent. So I understand, but it's a tough one. I'm sorry, Glenn. It's a tough one for me to answer.
Okay, I won't go too much in. Look, if you know the answer, jump in. Guna has asked possible transfer targets for January. I don't know. I've got nothing. So if you boys have something, sing out.
We keep being linked with Nzonzi. I'm pretty sure that one won't happen. I tweeted that a couple of weeks ago now. His agents are touting him around everywhere, and that's basically as far as it's gone with Arsenal. I personally think that we will try, regardless of whether Alexis goes this window or not, which I don't think he will, I personally think we will try and replace him this window. It will be a lot harder than it would do in the summer, but we've also got a very short summer this year because obviously, the new ruling about the transfer window closing the day before the season starts and the World Cup gives it a very short window. And also, everyone knows we're going to be looking. So I think regardless of whether Sanchez goes, I think we'll actively be trying to replace him. As I've mentioned many times on here before, we are in talks with Goretzka still. We still believe he's going to go to Bayern Munich. But as nothing's been announced and his side are being very coy on it, it's not been made official, so we're still trying to get him, but we think we're behind Bayern Munich in the race for him. We're going to be linked to a hell of a lot of players. Some will be true, most won't be. Who knows? I saw today one of the biggest, I think it was the Express, linked us with a club breaking. Spoke to Southampton in the summer. Can I see it happening? Absolutely not. But the silly season is upon us.
Yeah. MAA Gaiman, you spoke about Nzonzi. Rumours true that what does this mean for our formation and starting 11? If the rumours are true, I think he's saying.
Yeah, well, as I said, as far as I know, they're not. I don't. A lot of people really respect Guillaume Balaguer. I personally don't. But he tweeted about an hour ago to say, essentially, it's nonsense. Sevilla are open to sell him, but Arsenal have absolutely no interest, and it doesn't fit in what they're trying to do. I think the exact. Let me just get the exact words, so I'm not misquoting him. But he essentially agreed with my idea that we're not looking at him. I am just trying to find the tweet now.
That's right. While you're having a look, Matt Pride, mate, with the mood swings of the last 12 months, is Arsenal team better without Alexis? We touched that on earlier in the podcast, so we won't rehash over that. So
someone tweeted Guillaume Balaguer hasn't done the agreement. And his exact words were, Sevilla want to sell him, and Sevilla want to sell Nzonzi, but they have not received any offers from anyone yet. Arsenal are not interested, as they feel it wouldn't add to what they have. It would just be adding someone for no reason, essentially. So it's pretty much what I and many others have said throughout, that he is being offered round. He has a release clause, so everyone knows the fee for him. But I'd be amazed if it's he goes to, and at this point, so things change in football very quickly. But as of 3:37 p.m. UK time on the 15th of December, we have no plans of looking at going for him.
Okay, right. Okay, well, that'll wrap us up, guys, because we've been going for about an hour and a half, and we're only going to do a quick podcast. But thank you for your questions, and muchly appreciate everybody's support. Now, I'm going to ask everybody, if you're on iTunes, to go there and review us so others can find it. You can follow us at clock_talk. Someone here has a dodgy fucking microphone, and I apologise for that. But anyway, guys, thank you, and we will see you all again after the Newcastle game. Cheers.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.